Listen, there's a great work to be done. As soon as you win this court battle, you must deliver this message. Take advantage of this opportunity and declare a powerful message to this world. He expects more of us. He believes we can do more. Who's going to stop Christ? Who's going to stop Christ from getting this work done?
This is Behind the Work.
Welcome to Behind the Work. I'm Grant Turgeon. By the time this plays on the radio, it will actually be October 14th, the first day of the Feast of Tabernacles. Members of the Philadelphia Church of God around the world will be keeping this feast, and we're very excited about that. And I thought it would only be fitting on this first day of the feast to have an interview with the festival department manager, Mr. Jason Kokomais. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Mr. Turgeon. Thanks for having me. Great to be here today, and just looking forward to talking about all things feast.
Yeah, I was pretty excited about it, too. In fact, I was recording another show before this, and I was just thinking about the fact that we actually have a festival department, so that just shows like how fun God's way of life is, that we have a festival department, and it's something where you plan all year round to help everyone enjoy this 7-day festival. So just in general, how did that all go this year?
Well, yes, feast planning went really well this year, and I'm not just saying that. But it's really just a unique challenge every year because we have new feast sites on board almost every year in some fashion. So the challenge with that is if it's a new feast site, we're sort of having to reinvent the wheel a bit with the staff at those properties. So we have to really go in after the contracts are signed. We have to really go in there and even try to have face-to-face meetings with a lot of their staff. This could be reservations. It could be the chef. It's security. It could be housekeeping, activities, front office, accounting, all these different people that we meet with in some way and get to know them and try to just develop a relationship with them and explain that, you know, our group is excited about coming here. We're going to be here for 2 or 3 years, often is the case, and just try to develop that friendship with them. So then they really want to serve us, and, right. And even more so maybe than prior. So we do sit down and meet with those different people. And I think what's interesting this year, probably more than in the past, is we've had a lot of turnover at those properties, I've noticed. It's pretty common in the hotel industry for people to get promoted or move to a different property. Maybe they start off in the East Coast and they want to live in Florida or down in Florida later or in the Southwest. So they move around. So you start working with one person for maybe a handful of weeks or months, and then they tell you that this person is no longer here. So then you have to almost start over again. Hopefully that person kept good notes, and generally they do. And usually you have a sales contact that is kind of in your corner the whole way because they've worked with you on the contracting and all that. But this year we did have quite a bit of turnover on that side, so that made it a bit more of a challenge than usual. But 4 new locations in the U.S. this year, and so we're excited to offer those new locations to God's people. I think, 2 of those locations we've had in the past, so it's kind of coming back to Greenville, South Carolina after about a decade away. And then Indian Wells has always been a very popular site in the Southwest, and that one we were away for 3 feasts in between. So that's exciting. People seem to be enthused about the variety of sites that we have. And ticket sales were fantastic this year. We had really high numbers. I don't have all the statistics for you because it's just a really busy time for us, as you know. But, we were higher sales numbers than we've had before. Participation seems to be really good with all the activities in general. And so that's a lot of the planning, you know, we've been doing.
Wow, that's a lot of great details there. And I hope a lot of people listening can appreciate all that goes into that, because that is a quite advanced. It seems like it would be a logistical nightmare to do all of that, just to have all of that so highly organized. How early do you try to get these contracts locked into place before the next feast comes up?
So that's a great question. There's a couple different contracts that we talk about, and the one is the sort of the general overarching contract that we sign with a resort or a hotel, and those are typically signed a couple of years prior to the first feast there. The longer that we book that out, it helps us get better deals. If we wait till the last second, your options start to dry up quite a bit. So we do try to do that fairly long term. Try to have a plan where we're looking a couple years out. We don't want to look too early where we're saying, okay, 2025, we're not really quite ready to do that yet. But we do want to try to look, you know, where we're not kind of getting worried as we get closer that we're not going to have too many options to look at or consider. So hope that answers that question a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. So do you personally visit all of the American and the Canadian sites as well, just to narrow down from maybe a few options in a region to the final one? Do you have to go and visit every one, and are they sort of like bouncing offers back and forth to come up with the best one?
Yes, another really good question with the visiting these different locations. What we try to do is really not actually physically visit them unless it's fairly promising. It does take time and money to see these places, and there's many great places that we've never visited, not simply because they're not great places, just because we've never seen a good offer come through, or we know that the rates are just really high there right now. There's a lot of different sort of phases of negotiating, I guess you'd say. Some are simple through email or a phone call or maybe meeting at a conference. A couple that I try to get to each year, and I talk to the salesperson, and they're in a really great city or town, and they say, we'd love to have you, and we talk a little bit about, you know, the prices that we're looking for, that we're getting historically, and they just say, you know, I honestly can't get that for you right now. And so we say, well, let's just keep talking, because in the future, maybe those rates come down. And I'll actually share an article a little bit later that says that those things may be happening, hopefully, in the near future. But as far as visiting the locations go, you know, I work closely with Mr. Locher and, of course, with Mr. Fleury on kind of a strategy for each region, and then trying to kind of eliminate certain properties based on different factors, and especially the prices. That's the huge factor for us. If we go into a city knowing that the prices are twice as much as we're paying historically, then we're probably not even going to go visit that place. But if it's competitive, it looks promising on paper, it's safe, it's central, it has a lot of the features that we're looking for with the meeting space and sleeping rooms and activities nearby, family friendly, those types of things, then we'll try to scout it out in person. I will generally fly out there myself. Sometimes fly into one city and hop to others nearby. I never just look at one place. That's kind of one of my kind of unwritten rules. Like, don't ever just see one thing. See it two or three, even if it's in a day or two, because you want to bounce them off each other. You can do that from a negotiating standpoint as well.
Right.
if you can tell places that, hey, we're looking at two or three other places, and then they're thinking, okay, we've got to up our game here to get your business, and it gives us, you know, a little more flexibility with, okay, maybe this is really good at this property, but this property has this other feature. What works best for what, you know, what we need? And you kind of have like a wish list, almost like house hunting, you know, or car buying, something like that, where you're looking for as many things, positive things as you can. You may have to be willing to cut a few corners here and there to get the best package deal, but that's kind of how it works. And then even what I meant to mention earlier is the other contracts that we do outside of the biggest ones are, you know, food and beverage contracts, event contracts. Those can happen, again, within the hotel or resort, or mostly those can happen outside of that for an activity where we sign a contract saying, hey, we're bringing 50 teens to your venue on this day at this time. We want to do this, and this is how much, you know, we're willing to pay. So those are other contracts that we sign throughout the year. But the big ones we get done, you know, quite ahead of time. And then we even refer back to those. Even if the salesperson changes at that property, the next salesperson comes in and sees that we have that established contract that's signed, and then that's just kind of the blueprint of what we're going to be getting on our end, and what they're going to be giving to us in terms of service and other things.
Wow, that's great. And so before every feast, there's the feast planner set out or sent out to everybody who is going to be attending at the various sites, and that's a really helpful catalog of all the sites. It also has some great articles in there from you, from Chief Financial Officer Andrew Locher, from Mr. Gerald Fleury as well. So what is it like trying to get the whole feast planner set up and make sure that all the right pieces of literature are sent to the different sites and things like that?
Yes, so the feast planner really is a pretty big job for us. For one, we do it in-house within the festival department, and we do have some assistance from editorial at times as we need it. But and they do certainly help with the editing process and getting into the printer and whatnot. But everything in between, we try to handle just about. And so that puts quite a bit of work on us, from graphic design to layout to ideas for new articles. We're trying to at least keep that material fresh and informative and interesting, beneficial. We can only fit so much in there. We've kind of have about, I think it's a 40 to 46 pages or something like that to work with. So we keep it at right around that point. So once we know how many feast sites we have, then we know how many pages we have left to fill.
All right.
That's kind of generally how it works. But we work with that pretty much as soon as the feast ends. We get back and we start brainstorming on ideas. What can we make better from last year? We want people to really want to read it and look at it. And so to do that, we feel like we have to make it more interesting to look at and more new content, that type of thing. So that part of the process, we get into an InDesign file and we start playing around with things and just kind of go from there. And we have deadlines to start meeting, and we get with the regional offices generally pretty close out of the feast, send them an email saying, hope things are going well. Hope you're recovering from the feast, but now we're looking for information for, you know, Feast 2020, and we need it by, you know, January 1st so we can get it in the new planner. And so we work with them on those things. They'll submit different answers to different questions that we'll have, and then we'll just really package whatever we feel like they really need to promote to the transfers or those from their region in the planner. And again, they only have 2 pages to do it, so that's kind of the hard part, fitting all that information into 2 pages and making it look similar to the other spread. So that's quite a bit of work we kind of have from after the feast till, you know, maybe end of January for that, before we have to get ready to send a print. When we send a print, you know, we're looking like a 4 to 6 week time frame to turn it around. So that always takes a while from the printer itself, depending on their schedule. And then once they kind of get back here and we ship them out for mail processing, we have mail processing pack them with some inserts, sales inserts, a form letter, a couple other things. And then, you know, it's a couple more weeks before they generally hit boxes. And then we start to see just a really steady stream of trickling of registration forms and people registering online over those weeks and months.
It really is a detailed process. And it's interesting to hear about it, because even though we work in the same building, like, even I don't know a lot of the details of other people's jobs. So it's always just fascinating to me to just talk about these types of things. Are you allowed to say what your favorite North American feast site this year is? Is that politically correct?
That is a really hard question. Anyone that asks me that question, here's pretty much what I tell them. I really like each feast site for what it has to offer. We have obviously worked hard to, with God's involvement, to select these locations, and each one offers something unique. Each one is in a totally different region or part of the country. And so you to compare one in Southern California versus one in Wisconsin is very difficult in terms of, you know, similarities, let's say. But what I like is that each one has something unique. I wish I could almost combine the best of each of those feast sites, like, and put them in one place. Let's say the auditorium on this property and with these other features and this restaurant and those types of things. But we can't do that right now. But so I would say this. I'll throw out a couple of things that I like about each of the sites, if I can remember this. Obviously, the Edmond site, you have God's House and God's Headquarters campus. You can't beat that. Many people get out here for the first time. Maybe they're new in the church or haven't made the trek out here yet. So that's really exciting for them to be able to be in his house for the feast. It's a unique feast site because the hotels aren't on property. And so that makes it a little trickier to have to drive back and forth to your hotel in town, maybe 10 minutes away, not too bad. But that can be a bit of a challenge, getting in and out of the parking lot and those types of things. But we're able to have family day at least on campus, and sometimes some other events. But we work with, like, the Hilton Garden Inn is a great newer property that's been around just for a few years here in Edmond. And they've been a great partner with luncheons and other things like that for us, as well as quite a few of the members stay there. Outside of that, you know, I would say if we start with California, where I'll actually be for this feast, it's a nice warm weather location. You have to like the heat, because it will be probably 100 degrees on any given day, even in October.
Wow.
They say it's a dry heat. It's still hot, though. You do have quite a few pools there, so that's great for the families. A very millennial location, even though it's desert. There's a lot of greenery. An aquifer runs through that town, so it's just a very green desert. I don't really know how to explain it other than it's just quite different than maybe parts of, even though Arizona is beautiful. Yeah, a little different in the terrain or just how the greenery that you'll see. If we go over to Washington, this is our last year for the Blaine Washington site. I mean, you really can't beat the view. You're going to open your door, at least if you're facing the ocean there, and you're going to see ocean. You're going to be literally on it. We have no other feast site in the States, at least, that's quite like that. So that's a pretty unique setting to wake up to every morning. And it's an intimate setting. It's on an inlet. So that just makes it pretty special as well. So if we move over to Pennsylvania, I guess now I'm going all the way to the East Coast. We got some stuff in between, but we'll go to Pennsylvania. That's a new site for us as well. We've never had one in the state of Pennsylvania. Obviously, the Worldwide had them in the Poconos area, but this one is a suburb of Pittsburgh called Cranberry Township. Really a nice upscale suburb. It's about 20 to 30 minutes from downtown Pittsburgh, so you have the museums, architecture, really awesome-looking bridges. There's literally hundreds in Pittsburgh. I thought there were just a handful. And wow. I got asked that question by a salesperson. How many bridges do you think we have here? I said, oh, 15. We've got 220 or whatever it was.
Well, they've got three rivers running right through the city. It's incredibly beautiful just to look at it overhead.
It is.
Wow.
There's that really neat incline. I think we have this picture in the Feast Planner, and actually Mr. Andrew Hessong took the photo. So it's neat to use member photos, but he took that when he was out there visiting. But it's a pretty iconic photo of the, I forget the name of it exactly, but it's an incline in that part of the city. You can actually kind of hop on this cable car and like go up and down it, but the rivers are right there. So that's going to be a good site because it's in a nice suburb. It's got lots of great restaurants, shopping, some family attractions there as well. And the family location there, I think, is going to be really, really unique. It's called Sorgel's Orchard, and it's just a pretty neat setting for anything from petting animals to corn maze. The food should be really good. A couple little neat kind of farm-to-table shops there. One that the ladies are really going to enjoy shopping at, I think. So that's a pretty neat family day. That's really the only family day that we have off-site because the venue that we have there isn't really, it's built for luncheons, but it's not really built for family day. So we moved it just about 5 to 10 minutes away from the Doubletree there in Cranberry. So that's a neat family day, especially if we can pray for the weather. That's going to be the kicker, yeah. I think. But that venue took a little bit of time to work with because they were a little bit apprehensive of hosting 300 people for that meal, but sat down with the owner and one of the planners there, and they did agree to do it. So we're pretty excited about it.
Did you tell them we'll behave?
Yes.
We'll behave really well.
Always.
Don't worry.
Then if we go to Wisconsin, that's also a new feast site for us. We've never had one in the state of Wisconsin before either. Obviously, the Worldwide had them there over the years in, what's the town I'm drawing a blank on?
Oh.
A bigger tourist town there would be...
I know it too, actually. I can't think of it either. Radio does that to you.
Well, anyways, Lake Geneva is a nice, smaller tourist town, and it's very central between Chicago and Milwaukee, so it's great for the local members. And I was actually really surprised, I guess. I don't know if surprise is the right word, but many of them stayed this year for the feast. I thought, well, they live close enough to it, they'll want to go elsewhere. But really, almost all of them decided they really wanted to enjoy the short commute. And it's a great little town. It's on, obviously, a lake. It's called Lake Geneva. And it's got, you can hop on boats. There's plenty of shopping and restaurants. It's a little quaint little town, but it has quite a bit to offer as well. And it's scenic and peaceful and all those things. So that will be, I think, a nice sight people will enjoy. And then finally, Greenville, South Carolina was always a hit years ago. It's been at least, I'd say, 10 years since we were there. We were there 5 or 6 years in the past. People always really liked that site. And a lot of questions we would get, Mr. Loker and I, and when are we going back? And we said, well, we'll see what happens. But we kind of kept in contact with them over the years, and they just kept saying, we really want you back. And some of the same salespeople and others were there from the past, and they remembered the group and had great things to say about us. And so it just happened to be that we got some really great offers from them. We obviously always consider Florida. That's a really popular spot in the Southeast. But Greenville came with some pretty attractive offers to the church and helping with costs and whatnot. And so... It was really just a great deal for everyone. So that'll be great to return there. It's quite a different location in Greenville than we've had in the past. I mean, not too far from there, only about a 10-minute distance. But it's actually at a resort. It actually has golf, tennis, those types of things on property. In the past, we were at the convention center where you were commuting between 8 to 10 hotels and having a hard time parking those things. So that will be alleviated with this setup. And so people will pretty much be under one roof there, which would be nice. And that kind of goes for most of our feast sites, really pretty much all of them, where everyone's able to stay together and really just you run into church people just pretty much all the time, which is great. So,
well, South Carolina is by far the most highly attended this year besides headquarters, right? It seemed like every other person I asked where they were going for the feast was going to South Carolina. We're going to Wisconsin, so I haven't heard too many people who are going there, but... it does sound really nice. I mean, it would just be really hard to pick every year it's hard to pick which one you want to go to because they're all so high quality.
Sure. It is always a tough choice, and I'm always waiting to see when you get through registration. Okay, like what are the sites that are going to be the most attractive to the members or the most interesting or you name it, all these different factors that come into play. But like I said, you'll bump into a lot of Wisconsinites and Chicagoans and those types of people and at the Lake Geneva Feast site because that we have a lot of people from that region that stayed. So that always kind of plays with our numbers too. If we have more people from the region that stay, then we take less transfers. So that's why we like to have them 2 to 3 years so that, you know, pretty much by that point, everyone will have an opportunity to go to a site if they hadn't prior.
Well, those are some great people.
they are. I can agree with that. I'm from there. The Midwest, great people.
So is our producer, Joshua Sloan. So I'm surrounded by Chicagoans on a pretty regular basis. So I just had to get some more of it, apparently, for the feast. Well, how could PCG members assist the festival department? Like you said, the planning for the next feast always takes place pretty far in advance. So even as we're celebrating here in 2019, what could members do to help plan for a more efficient and effective feast for 2020?
We really just love the support of the members. Obviously, we couldn't do this without them, and this is exciting. Even when we talk to these different vendors, we explain that these people are all coming, staying for basically a 10-day period. Their kids are going to be out of school. We have really mixed ages from, I say, 0 to 100, because that's literally what you see at about each feast site. And we tell them that they're going to, you know, take good care of your property. They're going to be smiling. They're going to be happy. They're going to be well-dressed. Even that kind of blows people away, like, oh, everyone's wearing a dress, a skirt, a suit, sport coat, that kind of thing. The kids will probably wave and say hello and be maybe a bit more polite than they're used to probably.
Yeah.
Yeah, just the positive impact that the members make on each feast site is fantastic. We obviously truly appreciate the prayers. We get cards, emails, you name it, from different members stating that support. And we know it's out there, so we appreciate that. The encouragement, there's a lot of details, and we obviously know that God makes up where we lack, but we want to try to cross all the T's and dot all the I's and not leave anything undone. But we appreciate the prayers, especially for open doors in the future. The market is really strong in tourism and hospitality. It has been for probably nearly a decade now, and we really want to see like a downturn, at least I do. Not maybe completely economically, but in the hospitality industry, that will really help the church continue to get good prices and even better prices going forward. And so that will really help. We've seen rates that are higher than ever in this country before. I mean, you know, whether you're looking at the East Coast, West Coast, you know, you name it, there's just high prices. And so actually just this morning, I came across an article that I got emailed. I subscribed to a bunch of different newsletters and magazines and things like that for the industry of travel, but it says forecast 2020 favors meeting planners over meeting hoteliers. So I was really excited when I saw that. most people might say, well, I don't want to read that. But anyways, this is a couple things here, but it says that the forecasters at the Lodging Conference, a gathering of senior executives in the hotel industry held in Phoenix last month, predicted that 2020 will see the tipping point at which planners will regain the upper hand in pricing leverage at hotels in many markets. And we had this upper hand going back, you know, oh, I don't know, 7-8 years ago, probably. You know, we could pretty much come into most negotiations and kind of control that because there wasn't the demand. But now there's such demand that it just makes it tougher.
we all have so much more money right now, so everyone's taking vacation. It does make it a little bit harder. if they're not desperate to lower the prices, then
sure,
why would they do it?
Sure. We've obviously got God on our side, but these people, you know, they want to get every penny they can get out of you.
Right.
So we do work really hard with the negotiating. We really walk away from deals. You know, we just really come up with a really detailed plan and try to follow it as much as we can in order to get the best deal for all the members that we can. And so 2020, hopefully that's the case. That won't really impact, obviously, currently signed contracts, but ones that we sign in the future. If we're talking about 2020 favoring planners, then we're talking about 2021, 2022, 2023 being beneficial for the work and others planning events as well. So that's great. There's a lot of statistics in here that would probably bore our audience, but basically it's all about supply and demand. So we always have really great comments from these places. It's something that it's not in a letter or it's something that's like really well documented. It could just be a passing comment or something like that. But we had one that we've probably promoted a little bit over the years, at least in the documents that I get to salespeople, and they're always like, wow, these things are great that people say this about your group. And I'm like, they truly do. And these are, it's like a resume you build, you know, when you go to these places, that our people are really setting an example. And these places see that. Obviously, it's financial too. You know, that's a big part of these deals. But when they see the attitudes that our people have, this was one from the Higher Regency of Lexington, which we were at the last 3 years there in Kentucky. Todd Garvin, he's the director of sales and marketing. So he had a pretty high position within that property. And he said that, I want to thank you for holding your annual convention with us for the past 3 years. Our entire staff was sincerely disappointed that this would be the last year for us to host the group. You and everyone associated with the group have been a pleasure to work with over the years, and we would certainly love the opportunity to host the event again should your plans work out that way. So obviously we told him that, you know, this is a three-year contract and we're looking elsewhere after that, but even to hear that from someone like him was exciting, and we get that feedback, you know, really anywhere we go. Sometimes it's just hard to get a really good quote from these people, but sometimes they give it to us. So I get great help from my sister, Callie. She really diligently assists me part-time throughout the school year and then full-time during the summer and breaks. This morning we were working here in the mail processing center just below, packing pipe and drape, putting that on the pallets for shipment. We purchased quite a bit of pipe and drape this year. It's just a backdrop for the stages, but when you buy it, you save quite a bit of money from having to rent it year to year. So her and I were doing that this morning and working up a bit of a sweat doing that. But it was kind of a funny story because a couple of years ago, we ordered a smaller amount, which we still have at each fee site, or some of the sites at least, and we didn't realize it was waterlogged. Some part of the shipping process, it was submerged in water. And so a couple of days before the pallets were getting ready to ship, we decided to open the box and realize that they were water stained. And these are black pipe and drape. And so they had this white ring of water on probably 20 different pieces of thick material. So I called my wife and told her I needed to bring some laundry home. We contacted anyone else we could on campus, my sister, and got some of the student girls to help, and we were able to launder them within a pretty short period and then get them back on the pallets. But this year we waited as well. It's one of those last-minute things, but this year they were all clean. So,
well, that really shows how many details you have to think of. It's almost a miracle, really, that you even opened the box before sending it. I mean, that's not even something I would ever think of, so I'm glad that worked out.
I thought I'd just share a couple of statistics as well as we wrap up, that you can that we can share with the audience out there. We have approximately 4,300 people registered to attend the Feast of Tabernacles throughout 18 feast sites. We saw 1,100 transfers come through this year, so about 25% of those globally will be transferring. We see a little bit higher percentage in the U.S. Obviously, our sites are a little closer together to get to. 33% of U.S. Members are transferring. The biggest feast site, I think, as you mentioned, Mr. Turgeon, is here in Edmond, Oklahoma. That's always our goal, to keep this campus feast site, God's House, filled as much as we can. We've got 725 people registered to attend this site. Next biggest globally would be South Carolina, like you mentioned, 575. And then the third is the Philippines, 430. And then we have quite a few feast sites that are, you know, somewhere in the 350 range. You know, you've got Pennsylvania, California, I think Australia is somewhere around 300, and there's probably others that I'm forgetting. So we have quite a few in that range too. I wanted to also mention one more statistic. Mr. Locher gave me an update this morning on Tithe of the Tithe, and he said that we are 8.4% lower this time compared to last year. He said that will likely rebound a little as we approach the feast, but it is behind last year. So if you haven't sent your tithe of the tithe in, please do so as soon as you can. It really does help supporting this part of God's work and paying for all the expenses that are really yearly expenses with these different properties, resorts, any kind of contract that we sign. There's always money involved, so that really helps.
Well, it's always helpful to have a reminder like that, too. It's easy to overlook that when you're preparing so many other things for the feast. So, yeah, we really appreciate having you on today, Mr. Kokomais. Thanks so much.
Yeah, it's been great to be here. Hope I can come back sometime.
Oh, I would definitely love that. Thanks so much for coming on. We've been speaking with Festival Department Manager Jason Kokomais today. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Grant Turgeon. This has been Behind the Work.
You've been listening to Behind the Work. Email your thoughts to comments at kpcg.fm. Listen for a new episode each Monday at 11:30 a.m. Central Time.